On last week's episode, we aired part one of the Jerome Allen interview, in which Jerome talked about his life in the NBA bubble and as assistant coach with the Boston Celtics. If you missed that interview, be sure to go back and listen to that episode. In this episode, part two, we focus on his new book, which is entitled When the Alphabet Comes. It details his personal experience that led to the biggest show cause penalty that the NCAA has ever handed down as a result of taking a bribe in exchange for getting Philip Esformus' son on the Quaker team that Jerome coached. The resulting actions from his experience and actions from other fraudulent activities committed by Philip Esformus, the man who bribed Allen, ultimately would expose what has been dubbed Varsity Blues, the fraudulent college scheme that ensnared high-profile celebrities, including Lori Loughlin. Here's a continuation of that conversation with Ken Shropshire, Bill Roden, and Jerome Allen.
Sam, you're blessed in that you deal with a lot of young people, and young people are going to make mistakes. You know, we always say it, but it's one thing to say and do it. It seems like you are in an advantageous position. You know, we always like to put people in front of us, people who are like these role models who never get in any trouble, nothing ever happens to them, you know, as opposed to real live human beings. Does that give you, do you think that as you've been dealing with young players in the league and on the team, that it's given you, I guess, an advantage, or at least a perspective that is sort of meaningful? I mean, you could, you know, tell people when they make mistakes that this is not a death sentence, that you can overcome. Does it give you, do you feel that this perspective gives you a different kind of insight that could be helpful to the young players you're around?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Like, so I detail some certain events that was going on around our schedule, right, in my life, and the severity, you know, of it. And a couple of people have read it. Was just like, yo, that's crazy. I didn't know that was going on, right? And so with the guys, it's just, you know, I always say, yo, there's power in accountability. Mm. When you just take, you know, accountability for your actions, there's power in it. And so I didn't blame anyone. I didn't point fingers. Like, I put it on myself. It was me. It was my fault. I had a failure in character. No one. I can't say it was this person's fault or that person's fault. And so as I'm moving through these spaces around the players, they, you know, I really say, like, when we talk about leadership, right? Everybody who's been in a position of leadership and has never failed, right, at one thing or another, like, will probably never be the leader that they're capable of being, right? And I'm not saying that we should look for failures, but, like, the things that are learned and failure, right, a lot of times be the things that springboard us into, you know, the next season, you know, of our lives, or helps us to better kind of service whatever group or person that's coming down the pike. So, you know, from the guy's standpoint, like, I shared with him, you know, the day, you know, we had a meeting right before the game, and I'm not sure if it was my scout or not. And we were trying to talk about the culture and what maybe some of the guys were complaining about, and like, you know, what's needed or what's really important. And so I say to him, I kind of hijack the meeting, and I say, all right, so I get sentenced in 2 weeks, right? And my sentencing date had kept getting pushed further and further back. And I tried to use that as an example of, you know, my spirit when I would come in a locker room or in a practice setting or be on a court. Like, those guys didn't know that at the time. And so I spoke to the janitor. I spoke to security. I spoke to the trainers, like, everyone. I just always walked into work smiling and happy and just giving, right? Just in simple conversation, having this, like, this appreciation about where I was working at, what I was doing. Did I want more responsibilities? Yeah, I might have wanted to do that nice scout, or I might have wanted to have more of a voice in a particular instance in practice or whatever. But the reality of it was, I never lost sight of the team, my position on, you know, on the team, and being able to kind of reference, I was like, and you know what, y'all complaining about this and y'all got that going on. Guess what? Like, I could be going to jail, like, and lose. But yet, and still, I chose to make a decision about my attitude when I walked in that space. And you know, me, you know, being like, my head started bobbing. I started talking with my hands, and North Philly come out. And I would just say, this isn't about what I'm going through. I'm not trying to bring the space down or make this about me. I'm just saying, sometimes we got to get outside of ourselves. And if I can get outside of myself in a time where I don't know what's about to happen to me or my family, I'm not trying to hear anything that y'all saying. You're right, Pooh. You're right. That's real. No, that's real. You know what I'm saying? And so that maybe might have been one thing that allowed Brad to just get the group to execute whatever it is he was trying to execute. So,
right.
Jerome, when it first came out, I think I've said this to you. I know a number of people were, oh no, it didn't happen, you know, defending you. I mean, that's kind of character that we know you to have. And you know, when I was reading the book, especially the why part, which you spent a lot of time on, I wanted to hear more about the moment when you had a chance to do the right thing instead of the wrong thing. The first time there was the interaction with Cash. Do you recall your thoughts in that moment with what you almost did or why you the way you went?
So it was funny, right? So we actually went back and I think, not sure, and when I sent you the book, if the prologue was in there about me being in the Fountain Blue Hotel with the backpack, right, with the money in it. And so when the first time, like when it happened, it was like, again, I went through three stages in writing a book, right? The first couple of drafts was I'm writing to a like-minded group. Oh, God is good, isn't he, all the time. He got into a self-created storm and he managed it. Yeah, you know, amen. Yeah, praise God. Then I shifted and it was like, right, almost to the critics, like, and showed I was justified, right? And this is why I did it, right? And then finally, I rested on every human being, right? And the sins of the heart and playing out at the wrong time. Why I just said that is because, yeah, I said because, you know, I helped someone else get in the pen that wasn't an athlete, that I was trying to make a connection with a relationship so that I could help a couple of young men that look like me get birthed into a network that was going to be able to push them forward in life, right? I'm walking in these homes, sitting on these couches, convincing these parents, pay a little bit for school, right? Make a 40-year decision, not a 4-year decision. And I promise you, I'll birth him into a network of over 300,000 alumni, and whatever his interests are, I know I'm gonna be able to connect the dots for him. It was done for me. I'm gonna do it for him, right? And so now I get a kid from South Central Los Angeles who's looking for an internship and doesn't get it. But when he's looking for the internship, I pick up the phone to call those same individuals who picked up the phone to call me to ask me to help, right? And their child got in. Now it's their turn to kind of really bring something to the relationship, you know, as we said. And now I'm picking up the phone and it doesn't happen when I knew that they could have helped, right? And so I get pissed off to the point where it's almost like the issues that I wasn't aware of that really was inside of me now start to play out. So now it's like someone else called, they need help. You know, I'm like, I'm not doing it. Unless they're willing to help these kids, unless they're willing to help us, I'm not doing it. Right. And that really, the reality of it is that shouldn't have been that wasn't the position I had. I wasn't in control of processes and procedures in terms of the admissions process. I was in control of recruiting prospective student athletes. And now I have this position, right, that I was gifted in the first place, right, where I feel as though I'm bigger than the whole process, right? Oh, this wasn't done, so then I'm only going to associate with people who's willing to help. And so when I got to the exchange, right, to that part of the new relationship, I almost, you know, walked away like, okay, he real. All right, so here we go. It's on, right? I got him, right? Because he, and again, I'm from North Philly. I'm loyal. Like, I respect your word. I'm going to take it for what it is. Now he's holding up to his end of the bargain. So bet I got him, you know, and that was the wrong disposition to have, you know, regardless of whether I was trying to help someone or not. It wasn't my place.
Has this been, has the process been therapeutic for you? I know that's when it was typical, you write a book. Is it therapeutic? Well, no, I'm glad I'm done. But was it, was the process therapeutic? And I guess one of the great things about this is when you start going around, when the book is finally published and you can actually have the advantage of going around and talking to groups. So I guess there's two questions. Was this therapeutic? And do you think it could, I don't want to say stop other people from making mistakes, because people are going to make their mistakes, but what do you hope it accomplishes? So maybe that's it. Was it therapeutic, and what do you hope it accomplishes?
So, yes, it was therapeutic. And I give a lot of the credit to, so one of the editors' name was Deborah Free. She kept asking me why, right? And so the early draft was, and then she was like, all right, well, yeah, you got to explain, like, yeah, you got to give a little bit more details. And at first I was just like, nah, I did not want to tell why I did it, because at first I didn't want to feel like I was making excuses. I was just like, man, I did it, right? And I'm not blaming anyone. And I'm just talking about how I was feeling, right? And he said, well, why'd you feel that way? You know, I was like, all right, well, fine. Okay. So this is why I did. Oh, why? And why did you feel that way? After that? And he kept asking me why. You know, and I was just like, man, it's just crazy. But what it did was she helped me find my true self. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, this disdain for access and privilege, right? And the hypocrisy, there's a number of hypocritical themes that throughout that kind of carry the book, right? And there are a number of themes of exposure, both good and bad. Exposure to what I did, but just exposure in terms of, you know, whether it was taking my kids to Italy or doing summer program, you know, all the things, all the elements of exposure from, you know, the whole spectrum of it, right? And those things were pulled out. But what it did was, it helped me kind of really get to the center of, you know, like sins of the heart, like are real, right? People, you know, they might have saw my actions. Like, we had this whole conversation about the difference between reputation and integrity. People might have saw my actions, but they ain't know what I was thinking, right? And that's kind of like, you know, today, you know, I think about, you know, this, you know, Black Lives Matter movement and you know, all the things, all the symbolism, like, you know, people, you know, like could kind of use certain representations of what of themselves to stand in place, but what are they really truly thinking, right? And so that was, you know, that was kind of, you know, kind of like it. And what I was hoping to get out of writing it was, to be simply put, I just wanted God to kind of to get the glory, right? You know, yeah, they told me, like, you know, there were people on the other side of the storm waiting for you, right, while I'm going through it. Like, no, I don't want to go through it. Like, I said, trust me, if you go through it with the right posture, this will help someone. And what's been amazing is that even some of the other NBA coaches or college coaches or some of the other people in beta groups that have read the book, like, they've been, like, their responses have been encouraging, to the point where I'm aware that my obedience in writing this what was significant, because, you know, I may think that, and I think it's personally a crazy story. Like I would say, man, Disney couldn't have wrote this script, right? But, you know, me thinking, I didn't want to get blinded by my own biases, right? And just like some of the things that transpired through it all, I was like, yo, this is crazy. Almost as if like I'm not a character in the story, right? And so what it told me was that, like, if delivered the right way, if I stay true to what he wanted me to stay true to, that ultimately he would get to grow. This is not about me. This is not about me being North Philly tough, you know, rumbling the feds. No, like, and I say that, you know what? I was shook when they showed up at TDR and the night we played Houston Rockets. I was shook when they came in and said, you know, you're indicted and we got six, and you're facing six charges. And my lawyer, Ron Sullivan, said, wrong. Probably could beat five out of the six charges, but if we lose, everything would come out. And I mean, we talking 40 years. I mean, Roman would have been 49 and Phil and Jerome would have been 63. I was shook. I wanted, I contemplated suicide. Like I talk about, everybody say, yeah, you know, like I got faith, you know, God make a way out of no way, but nobody never want to be in a no way out situation, you know? And like, I'm angry. Like, man, why are you going to put me through this? This guy cheating, that guy cheating. I know they doing this, they doing that. I ain't perfect. Like, I'm angry. Like, and I put all of this stuff down to say that I tried to be as real as I possibly could in this journey to ultimately bring it back, you know, to him, because I wasn't willing to sign up for it, right? As much as I said, Lord, let your will be done, right? We say that, but we really want our will to be in alignment with this. But you know what? Because it was done his way, I'm better. Like, I'm a better leader. I'm a better husband. I'm a better father. I'm a better coach. I'm just better. So the nutrients gained from the exposure would have only been able to be obtained had I went through it his way, right? And I would be lying to the three of y'all if I said, yeah, I just fell back and was like, go ahead, do what you're going to do. I really can't. That's why, like, it's beyond being grateful. That's why it's like, man, you know, like, He is unreal. Nobody, not myself, my wife, or my lawyer, thought that through it all, the Celtics would have like supported me through it. Like, I'm literally coaching NBA games with a location monitor on my ankle. I wear skinny suits and it's getting hung up on my monitor at times or during timeouts and all that. Like, but just their compassion and their support, and just, you know, Brad Stevens just saying, "Rome, you know, Danny Ainge told me, like, Rome, you know, we love you. We love your family. I'm not worried about a PR or a media hit. Only thing I'm worried about is a door, an opportunity closing for you because someone's afraid of that label, because I think you got a bright future in this business." It blew me away. It blew me away that's what he was worried about, you know? And so I didn't think a lot of things would transpire the way they did. And so because of that, I just felt like I had to tell the truth in terms of what my emotional state was in on every spot, right? And I had to, like, you know, make sure that I ain't take any of the credit. So.
I know we're running out of time. How did you feel when you see these? I see where one of the actors, a couple of you actually give due time. I think Lori Loughlin or somebody actually doing real time. What did you think?
I felt bad on Friday. You know, I felt bad, and not to be symbolic about it in terms of she's a Hollywood actress, right? She didn't get the Hollywood ending. Somebody might think that I got a Hollywood ending, right? But it's just like no one knew that my case is the genesis of the college admission scandal. Like my case birthed it, right? And so, like, I know what I went through. Like, even the guys, like, when I got called back in at the beginning of that case, I was done, sentenced, done, right? Pleaded out, whatever. I got called back in. And on on some people that I knew pointed the finger in my direction to start with, right? Who told on me. And I thought about their families. I was like, you know, like their sense of normalcy threatened, right? The embarrassment that comes with it, their wives, their children, right? I wouldn't want them to have to go through, you know, what I went through. I was thankful that God went through it with me, right? He was right there through it all. I don't know if they had the type of relationship, but in my flesh, I wanted to say, yeah, that's what they get. Yeah, revenge served cold. But the reality of it is I would have lost everything I said that I gained, right? If that would have been my attitude when I got called back in to really shine some light on that case. And so for her and her husband to get time, like, you don't want to see that. You know, like, I don't want my opinion. You know, I know the things that go on, right? And these college settings and these admissions departments, right? That I won't kind of like speak on, right? Because I don't want to make it about those things. But the reality of it is from knowing what I was facing to knowing what they had to face and then receive, like I just, obviously I'm be like grateful and thankful that, you know, God chose something different for me, but like I felt bad for them and their families.
Jerome, what about the 15-year sanction by the NCAA? I mean, that was, it is extraordinary in terms of length, and you know, we don't need to name, unless you want to, other coaches that have done other things and received much lesser sanctions. But how does that strike you? How did it strike you? And how's that, or does it impact your career?
Yeah, well, to answer all of it, hopefully it won't be too long. One, I think it's comical, right? I think it's not necessarily hypocritical. This is how I'm able to kind of get past their ruling, right? Because I say to myself, Jerome, you put yourself in this position to have that even be an issue, right? So before I even agree to address the sanctions or the ruling, I still make it about me, right? Well, you know, that, Jerome, that's what you get because you put yourself in this position. But with that being said, right, that's me trying to have the right perspective, right, and not let my flesh kind of get the best of me. But with that being said, I mean, I know there's guys in this business who's done way more than what I've done, right? And one, not be prosecuted. Two, like, definitely not. You know, it's virtually like the death sentence. Like, I can't, when I'm going to be 62, and not to say that that's old, right? But in terms of...
Well, I appreciate that. That's one thing I appreciate.
Well, I'm just saying in terms of seeking employment, yeah. Right? In this profession, right, to try to come back to that level. So you might as well say my college coaching career is over, right? And because at 62, I still would have to serve a half a year suspension on top of the 15 years. And I was like, come on, man. Like, it's great. But like I said, I always bring it back to, I'll highlight the hypocrisy, right? But ultimately, I'll bring it back to me, right? Because I put myself in that position. And yeah, there's some things that transpired and other coaches that did some crazy things or had some things go on underneath their watch that blows my mind, and they come right back and they get jobs. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. And so we can make it about, like, yeah, like I can't go back anywhere. You know, race is real. You know, the NCAA, they know, like, you know, what's going on. We talk about, like, just, you mean to tell me with the other college basketball scandal, right, and the four assistants, mean to tell me, like, none of the other head coaches at those places knew what was going on. And I'm not even saying that the assistants are guilty, but you have coaches on tape saying certain things and they do nothing to them, you know, nothing to them. And so because I wouldn't talk to the NCAA, I wouldn't talk to them, right? They didn't have jurisdiction to file certain charges. I elected not to talk to them. Like, you know, my case is my case. So because I wouldn't talk to him, I get a 15-year show clause. Like, really, what is that really addressing all the other things? But the reality of it is, you know what? I put myself in you know, disposition to even have them even consider issuing such penalty. But I mean, it's a lot of hypocrisy, you know, with that body. So,
do you think there's a possibility you'd get an NBA head coaching job?
And the fact that I'm on this Zoom right now talking to y'all, and I didn't call you collect, says me, God can do exceedingly and abundantly. And I would, so to answer your question, I would like to say yes.
Yeah, yeah. This last one for me. I mean, you know, maybe you will not coach in college, maybe you will, but it seems like the NBA or the pro level, whether it's in the NBA or overseas or whatever, it seems like it poses a different challenge. Do you still prefer the college level from what you've seen about the NBA level, or do you think that you can get into that challenge as well? Or what are the different challenges, I guess? Maybe that's a better question.
I told someone, and I didn't even realize this until I went on this journey and writing this book, that it was the first time I ever thought this. I played and coached, right, in both college, Europe, and the NBA, right? And when I thought about it, I was like, yeah, that's crazy. You know, my last year, you know, in Europe, I stopped playing and became and coached the team. We didn't win a game, but that's a different story, right? So to be able to do that, then to coach and play in college, and then to be an assistant and have played in the NBA, as I said, you know, and bringing that up, not to necessarily make it about me, but just, you know, talk about like the fusion of concepts in terms of the X's and O's of the game, but the themes that run parallel on all three levels, right, that are good and bad about it. And so, you know, college, you know, obviously it was different. The NBA is, you know, it's all basketball, but the human elements to trying to get a group to function as one, the things that plague it and support it are always the same no matter what level you want. And so if you want to talk about player development, you want to talk about mental health, you want to talk about understanding the why, coaching the details, you want to talk about defense fundamentals, you want to talk about rebounding, getting back in transition, you want to talk about the buy-in, creating incentive for all 15 players. You want to talk about all these things that, regardless of what level you're on, they're really the kind of like the pillars of what could kind of propel the group forward. And so it's just, you know, just addressing players holistically. Like, you just can't just scream, you know, anymore. Like, you got to develop relationships and build trust and get individuals to know that you genuinely care about them before you can move them in a way that could be transformative. And so whether it's the pros or whether it's college, each level has challenges. But I think at the core of it, the things are all still always the same. It's just that they're just a little bit richer. Well, not a little bit richer. It's just they're rich in the NBA.
Right.
Ken, do you want to put a wrapper on this?
Yeah, I mean, first, before we go, Drum, I'm going to give you a chance to be the show those marketing skills and talk about how people can access the book when it's available, all those things that you should have the tip of your tongue the first time you had a chance to put it out there. So what can you tell us about obtaining the book?
Okay. So the book is called When the Alphabet Comes, A Life Changed by Exposure. And it will be released on September 1st, 2020. All right. You can purchase the book if you go through Book Babies Bookshop. You can purchase the book before it is available on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. It will be available through those major distribution chains, I think October the 14th. But as of September 1, you could go to Book Baby's bookshop store and purchase the book, which is actually next Tuesday. We're excited. We thank everyone for their support. And I think, hopefully, I've done it justice in terms of trying to deliver something that ultimately gives God the glory. And if you're looking for content inside the bubble, you can follow me at Jerome Allen 53 on Instagram. We're currently on season 3 of what we call the Restart, which is daily videos of just life off the court. So if you want to see the Celtics edition of New Edition, meaning myself, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Taco Fall missed dance rehearsal that day where we're doing a dance routine to New Edition's If It Isn't Love. If you want to hear questions on Philly, like what is a John and where's the best cheesesteak place, you can hear Brad Wanamaker or Marcus and Markeith Morris talking about that. If you just want to hear me roast the guys on the bus or on the sidelines about their performance and practice. If you want to see the lip sync battle that transpired between myself, Taco Fall, and Robert Williams and Vincent Poirier, you can hear Taco Fall reciting Paid in Full by Eric B. and Ta Kim. It's all on my Instagram. And obviously you can go to whenthealphabetcomes.com right now to just follow the book's journey and newsletters and interviews and information that's currently up right now.
Hey, we are 20 years later. The shy kid from North who is fluent in Italian, speaks a lot of French, wears skinny suits and is just a full grown man. And this book, I've been fortunate to see bits and pieces along the journey. Really. Just makes me that much prouder of a man I have grown to love, seeing him develop from where he came from to where he is now, and still from there, and let go of that. Jerome, can't thank you enough,
thank you.
We can do along the way. Please do reach back.
Once again, that was Jerome Allen, along with Ken Shropshire and Bill Roden. We've put a link to Jerome's new book, When the Alphabet Comes, in our show notes. The Global Sport Matters podcast is a production of the Global Sport Institute and Global Sport Matters. This episode was produced by Kendall Jones and by me, Andrew Ramsamy. Our manager for marketing and communications is Crisal Valencia. To stay up to date with the latest stories, events, and podcasts from us, be sure to follow us on Twitter. We are at Global Sport MTRS. Until next time, thanks for listening.